from deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is almost June 1st. And in the next few days, you are going to hear spokespersons, maybe even spokesbots, for the United States Army Corps of Engineers say, New Orleans has never been safer. Because June 1st is the putative deadline for the completion of the so-called 100-year flood protection, risk reduction system that the Corps has built in the wake of a little thing that happened in 2005. And so when the Corps of Engineers says New Orleans has never been safer, you have to remember this is from the agency whose last protection system nearly destroyed it. If you want more details on all of that, or on this interesting fact, the pump system at the heart of the new protective thing, risk reduction thing, the Corps has taken to calling it a temporary system with a 3 to 5 year lifespan. It is now entering its sixth year of service. If you want more information on any of that, because you're paying for it, The Big Uneasy is still showing at the Cinema Village in New York, still showing at the Denver Film Society, and has just started a little weekend run. Hey, you know, if you're in Southern California, drop everything you could and head on over to the Monica, because it plays this very morning at 11. You can hear the show on a podcast, you know. And I tell you this only because otherwise, listening here, you might not know any of it. You know, other priorities, ladies and gentlemen, other priorities. And starting next week in Hartford, the Hartford area of Connecticut, and in Baton Rouge. So there you go. But never been safer. Then what? Then what? Ladies and gentlemen, some good news. You do not have to worry about cartoon penguins showing up in Navy SEAL outfits. The Walt Disney Company has reversed course and withdrawn its application to trademark SEAL Team 6, the name of the elite Navy unit that killed Osama bin Laden. The Navy filed its own application for trademarks to SEAL Team and Navy SEALs about a week after Disney. Just a week after Disney. Timing, Navy. The Navy spokesman said, "We're fully committed to protecting our trademark rights." The Navy, ladies and gentlemen, that's what they're thinking about. A Disney spokesperson said the company was withdrawing out of deference to the Navy. Air Force? But Navy. No, they didn't say that. Disney planned to use the trademark to sell merchandise and develop a show for ABC based on the Navy SEALs. I'm smelling comedy. I'm smelling ABC comedy, but no, not anymore. Sony Pictures is close to a deal to distribute a project from Catherine Bigelow about the bin Laden raid. And Universal is preparing a Navy SEAL movie from Peter Berg. That's from Deadline. So anyway, nothing from Disney. No funny ears or noses on the Navy SEAL people. And ladies and gentlemen, news of the godly, the Salesians of St. John Bosco have removed two European members from their duties after it was discovered one belonged to a pro-pedophile organization and another made remarks defending pedophilia. The Salesian headquarters in Rome said the Dutch priest identified only as Father B. And the superior of the Salesians in the Netherlands, Father Herman Spronk, have been suspended. News of the godly, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of Hello, Welcome to the Show.
Could you call on Lady Day? troubles away. They'll wash your troubles away. They'll wash your troubles away.
If only. From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer welcoming you to this edition of the show. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the Olympic movement. Executive producer Dick Ebersole. In an attempt to revive flagging interest in women's badminton as the 2012 London Olympics approach, officials governing the sport have decided that its female athletes need to appear more womanly. To create a more attractive presentation, quotes. The Badminton World Federation, wow, that sounds big, has decreed that women must wear skirts or dresses to play at the elite level, beginning this Wednesday. Tuesday? Yeah. Many now compete in shorts or tracksuit pants. Ugh. The dress code would make female players appear more feminine and appealing to fans and corporate sponsors, according to officials. The rule has been roundly criticized as sexist, a hindrance to performance and offensive to Muslim women who play the sport in large numbers in Asian countries. Implementation has already been delayed by a month. Sounds like the pumps. Athletes' representatives say they will seek to have the dress code scrapped. This is a blatant attempt to sexualize women, says Janice Forsyth, director of the International Center for Olympic Studies at the University of Western Ontario. Western Ontario. They have Western Ontario now. It's amazing. You'd think at some point someone would have said, wait a minute, what are we doing? She asks. Women will still be allowed to wear shorts or long pants for cultural or religious reasons, but these garments must be worn beneath a dress or skirt, which might be cumbersome. Women wear more revealing outfits than men in a number of Olympic sports like gymnastics, track and field, volleyball, and beach volleyball. Even the bikinis in beach volleyball can be somewhat justified on the grounds of functionality. Yet the badminton rule, says the New York Times, seems to have been devised strictly for reasons of appearance. It was formulated in consultation with Octagon, an international marketing firm, which did not respond to requests for comment. We're not trying to use sex to promote badminton, says Paisan Rangsitkipfo. An American who is deputy president of the Badminton World Federation based in Kuala Lumpur. We just want them to look feminine and have a nice presentation so women will be more popular. Interest is declining, he says, adding that some women compete in oversized shorts and long pants and appear baggy, almost like men. Hardly anybody is watching, he said. TV ratings are down. We want to build them up to where they should be. They play quite well. We want them to look nicer on the court and have more marketing value for themselves. I'm surprised we got a lot of criticism. Many have said while they supported attempts to popularize women's badminton, like offering equal prize money, they considered it an affront to be told to wear a dress or a skirt. The Badminton Federation, like many international sports governing bodies, continues to be run largely by men. Of the 26 members of the Federation's council and executive board, only two are women. Way to go, everybody. Especially the guys. The Olympics. It's a movement. And we all need one. Every day. Boy, Dick Ebersole should have executive produced that. It would have been. Ladies and gentlemen, now news of the new F-bomb foreclosure. Bank of America and Morgan Stanley have agreed to pay more than $22 million combined, Wow. That's a lot of money for a huge multinational bank, isn't it? Is it? Is it a little money? Is it some money? It's chump change. All right. Well, anyway, they've agreed to pay more than $22 million combined to settle federal civil charges on improperly foreclosing on military personnel. Happy Memorial Day, everybody. Between 2006 and 2009, the mortgage lenders foreclosed on 178 military members in 22 states without getting court approval. Support the troops, won't you? The military members affected will each receive $125,000 on average. The banks will also continue to investigate whether improper foreclosures occurred in 2009 through 2010. What do you bet? You think? The settlement is easily the largest amount recovered in a case of improper military foreclosures, according to an assistant attorney general. And a federal judge in Oregon delivered a potential setback to the mortgage industry's electronic registry system, MERS, in a ruling this week. Oregon allows lenders to foreclose without going to court, but the state requires banks to record the ownership history of the mortgage with local county governments. MERS was created by the mortgage industry in the 1990s, as you've heard on this broadcast, to facilitate the recording of mortgages electronically, not with local county offices. Wednesday's ruling says the bank should be required to process foreclosures through the court system in Oregon for loans that are in the MERS system. A spokeswoman for MERS said the ruling was inconsistent with other state decisions. They're going to appeal. News of the new F-bomb, ladies and gentlemen. And now, tales of airport security. This comes from Barbara, who says she used to work for The Simpsons. That's a TV show popular in many countries. Dear Harry, I was traveling back to California from Albuquerque last week. No, I made the same trip a couple weeks ago, Barbara. Let's see if our experiences match. No, I flew from Santa Fe, sorry. All right, forget it. Forget the... I shouldn't have interrupted. What was I thinking? Barbara continues, while in the airport security line, I was thinking of how to strike the exact correct expression on my face to avoid either the X-ray machine or the alternative. I thought the proper hint of a light and breezy look on my face was worth practicing in my mind for the moment that I walked through the detector. It had to be just right, as I wanted to avoid too much of a smile, as that could be read as misread as an invitation to touch my junk. After I walked through the metal detector, I saw everyone putting their shoes back on. I realized that, with all my thinking about my expression, I'd forgotten to take off my shoes. Nobody seemed to mind. Tales of Airport Security, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And now, a story that doesn't really fit into any of the regular copyrighted features of this program. I hope you don't mind that. It's sort of sui generis, but it did catch the eye of the host of this program. Hence, here it is. Dateline El Paso, Texas. The Equal Employment Opportunity Commission is suing Starbucks Coffee Company for firing a dwarf who asked for a stool to perform her job as a barista at an El Paso Starbucks. This lawsuit was filed in federal court in El Paso. It alleges Starbucks fired Elsa Salard after 3 days of training because it deemed she'd pose a danger to customers and coworkers. The commission contends Starbucks' actions violated the Americans with Disabilities Act. The agency seeks lost wages or Las Vegas and compensatory damages and a court order that Starbucks adopt policies to correct and prevent disability discrimination. Starbucks said in its own statement its policies provide for equal employment opportunities and strictly prohibit discrimination on the basis of disability. More about this, I guess, in court or now.
Will she pull me a shot? I can't say it's not the hardest thing I've ever seen. Like a kid in school, she clambered up a stool to work the espresso machine. The service was hasty, the coffee was as tasty as it can be when you burn the beans. The next day she was canned, sack-fired banned for having a shortage in her jeans. Out in the West Texas town of El Paso, they're suing Starbucks on behalf of a dwarf. You're not even supposed to use that word anymore. Yet that little girl was still shown to the door, as if she's a terrorist or a Sandinista, when she only yearned to be the littlest barista. Out in the West Texas town of El Paso, they're suing Starbucks on behalf of a dwarf. You're not even supposed to use that word anymore. Yeah, that little girl, she was still shown the door. Like you do with a drunk or a noisy tourista. Was it her dream or just a step up? You'd never refuse a cup from the littlest barista.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, returning to our copyrighted features. Friend the Adam. Addy, you okay over there?
I'm fine. I'm fine. What do you want?
Nothing. He's a little touchy today, Addy. Things not going right over there?
You're fine.
Deadline Port Gibson, Mississippi. A spokeswoman for the Grand Gulf nuclear power plant in South Mississippi said workers are trying to identify the source of radioactive water accidentally released into the Mississippi River late last month. Doesn't the Mississippi have enough on its mind right now? At no time was the public or the health of the public in any type of danger, said Grand Gulf spokeswoman Suzanne Anderson. All right, Suzanne, we'll hold you to that. She said the plant has operated safely since it went into commercial operation in 1985. The water was had some tritium. Imagine that, tritium in some water near a nuclear plant. I have never in my... As a team from the International Atomic Energy Agency visits the crippled Fukushima nuclear plant this week. Academics warn the company has failed to disclose the scale of radiation leaks and faces a massive problem with contaminated water. This is according to Bloomberg News. TEPCO has been pumping cooling water into the three reactors that melted down. By May 18th, almost 100,000 tons of radioactive water had leaked into basements and other areas of the plant. The volume of radiated water may double by the end of December and will cost $518 million to decontaminate. Well, that's cheap. That's safe. According to TEPCO's own estimates, contaminated water is increasing, and this is a massive problem, according to Tetsuo Iguchi, a specialist in isotope analysis and radiation detection at Nagoya University. They need to find a place to store the contaminated water, and they need to guarantee it won't go into the soil, he says. Yucca Mountain? Just thinking. Just blue sky in here. Just... TEPCO has been withholding data on radiation, according to an advisor from Japan's prime minister. He said he ordered the utility to check for any data it hasn't disclosed and release the material as soon as possible. This kind of repetition will invite public distrust, says the chief cabinet secretary of the Japanese government. Japan's nuclear safety agency originally estimated the radiation from Fukushima to be about 10% of that from Chernobyl. A TEPCO official said at the time, the amount may eventually exceed the Chernobyl emission, you see. Nuclear fuel at the stricken plant began melting just 5 hours after the earthquake. That's according to a Japanese nuclear engineer talking to a panel of U.S. scientists this week. About 11 hours later, all of the uranium fuel in the facility's Unit 1 reactor had slumped to the bottom of its inner containment vessel, boring a hole through a thick steel lining, according to the University of Tokyo's Naoto Sekimura. He was speaking, scientists, the National Academy of Sciences. Sekimura's assessment further damages the credibility of TEPCO. This week, it admitted for the first time that nuclear fuel in three of the plant's reactors had melted down, a conclusion independent scientists had reached long ago. And in a rare insight into internal deliberations at the NRC in this country, Commissioner George Apostolakis said that NRC staff members thought the cores were melting early in the crisis. This conclusion and the lack of information from Japanese authorities drove the U.S. NRC to recommend evacuating Americans within a 50-mile radius of the facility, an area far larger than the 12-mile evacuation zone called on by the Japanese government. The six-reactor complex continues to emit radiation into the air and water. TEPCO now says it will not be able to bring the three heavily damaged reactors under control until late this year or early next year. The radioactive material already spewed by the plant could cause 120 cases of leukemia in Japanese children over the next 10 years, according to scientists from the National Cancer Institute. John F. Kelly from the U.S. Energy Department warned the nuclear facility still faces grave danger. He says protective components at the facility could crack because of high salt levels from the seawater pumped in to cool them, you see. But wait, there's more, because it's getting safer. The Wolf Creek nuclear plant, 150 miles from tornado-ravaged Joplin, Missouri, gets poor marks from federal inspectors for weaknesses in its tornado preparedness plan. Federal inspections at Wolf Creek and other nuclear plants were conducted recently to determine whether U.S. plants are capable of withstanding such events. Of 66 operating sites, the NRC had concerns about 12. Areas of concern included poor training. We hear that a lot. Potential problems drawing water from the plant's water storage tank. Isn't that why it's in the tank, is to be drawn? And the fact that the plant's fire truck is kept in a sheet metal building vulnerable to a tornado. Despite those issues, the NRC found that every U.S. plant, quote, has the capability to maintain reactor safety following large explosions or fires. The U.S. nuclear power industry, this will be reassuring to you, It's about time, isn't it? Something's reassuring? Check this. The U.S. nuclear power industry, when responding to concerns raised by the Fukushima disaster, learned benefited from lessons learned from guesses? Any guesses? Lessons learned from? No. From the oil industry's response to the Deepwater Horizon oil spill. That's according to a top official with the Nuclear Energy Institute. That's the main trade group for nuclear power companies. It crafted emergency plans and developed a communication strategy after analyzing the events surrounding the BP oil spill. We kind of did a lessons learned on that. How would we apply that to our industry if we had an event like that? Said the spokesperson for the Institute. You are reassured. Oh, admit it. Come on. Drop that cynical pose. Ladies and gentlemen, Dateline Tokyo, SoftBank, which is an investment firm, its president Masayoshi Son is not waiting for the Japanese government to shift the economy away from depending on nuclear reactors located on dangerous fault lines. Son, who is ethnically Korean and perhaps Japan's wealthiest man, says SoftBank will shoulder most of the $980 million cost of building 10 massive solar power plants in Japan, according to Asia Times. Other corporations and state organizations are making their own moves to save power or create new energy technologies. Prefectures including Hokkaido, Nagasaki, and Saitama will join his project, the SoftBank project, to build solar power plants to wean Japan off nuclear energy. The prefectures will build vast solar power farms on abandoned farmland, of which Japan has no shortage. Son also wants to evolve 7 prefectures in western Japan, even though they're home. One of them is home to Yakuza mafias allegedly connected to groups hiring temporary workers known as nuclear gypsies to do the dirty work at reactors. Already more than half of Japan's aging nuclear reactors are switched off. Japan's auto manufacturers are radically altering work schedules, taking Thursday and Friday off and working Saturdays and Sundays instead. Japan in the 1980s was the world's leading solar power producer. Dow Corning Torre in Tokyo is among those calling for turning contaminated land around Fukushima into a massive solar power farm. Call the gypsies. They'll do it. Others want to make better use of geothermal energy from some of Japan's 200 volcanoes and 28,000 hot springs. 7-Eleven plans to install solar panels on the roofs of 1,000 stores.
Oh, thank heaven for 7-Eleven.
The Tokyo Bay Fireworks Festival has been canceled. Organizers have moved a different fireworks festival back a month to avoid expected power shortages during the hottest week of the summer. But despite that meltdown, Toshiba will try to convince the world, Toshiba saying it will need a few more years to win over buyers for the 39 reactors it hopes to sell worldwide by 2015. It will try to convince the world that nuclear energy is safe. Quote, we cannot pursue our strategy if opposition to nuclear energy spreads worldwide, says his spokesman, the president of Toshiba. Well, all right then, because I care about your strategy. You're right. The 3 reactors at Fukushima have melted fuel rods and may take longer than 9 months to gain control at the site, says a member of the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission. Nuclear scientists in Iran have warned of the serious implications an earthquake in Iran's Gulf region could have for the nuclear reactor in Bushehr, according to the Daily Telegraph. This announcement comes only a week after the Iranian foreign minister said the Bushehr plant is operational. That, despite what we reported. Passed on to you a few weeks ago that the Russians were slow-walking their aid to that plant. The Swiss government decided this week to phase out nuclear power with the last reactor coming offline in 2034, but it will not close any existing power station prematurely. Public confidence in the nuclear industry, which produces 40% of Switzerland's electricity, has collapsed after you-know-what. In March, the government suspended the approvals process for 3 new nuclear power stations pending a review into safety standards. Guess that's not necessary anymore. Another American plant with a possible problem. Huge areas of the accident-prone Indian Point nuclear plant near New York City lack essential firefighting equipment like sprinklers and fire extinguishers, according to the New York Daily News. It's only 24 miles from New York. It's missing basic tools even as it sits on an earthquake fault and has suffered two fires since 2007. Well, law of averages is not going to have another fire. Come on. Come on, Daily News. Such safety shortcuts approved for years by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission now face new scrutiny. Of the 275 fire zones at Indian Point, 198 lack automatic fire suppression systems. 72% of the facility, therefore, lacks things like sprinklers and automatic water sprays. One vulnerable hotspot is the spent fuel pool, where radioactive and superheated fuel rods are kept cool. Well, fire couldn't threaten. There are no manual fire suppression systems, such as hydrants or fire extinguishers, in 40% of the plant. Fire detection systems common to most major office buildings are unavailable in 63% of the plant. The New York Attorney General says Entergy, which runs the plant, wants to renew 275 exemptions from the NRC, one for each fire zone. They would let workers shut the plant manually in case of a fire instead of automatically via fire detection and suppression systems. NRC spokesman, now listen for the weasel words in this one, ladies and gentlemen. NRC spokesman Neil Sheehan says the agency has not, quote, identified any issues that rise to the level of an immediate safety concern, unquote. All right, I'm going back to sleep. I'm going to sleep till at least noon. This will sound familiar, by the way, taking a page, literally, from the book of BP. Japanese nuclear regulators trusted that the reactors at Fukushima were safe from the worst waves an earthquake could muster based on a safety plan from TEPCO issued a decade ago that was a single page in length. Did it mention walruses? We don't know. Tokyo Electric, in the December 19, 2001 statement, rules out the possibility of a tsunami large enough to knock the plant offline. Give scant details to justify the conclusion, which could prove to be wrong. This is all we saw, said Masaru Kobayashi, who is at the Nuclear and Industrial Safety Agency. We did not look into the validity of the content. All right. Well, that made for an easy day. Clean. Addie, you're not dozing off, are you?
I can't.
He's not a happy Adam. Clean, safe, cheap, too safe to be clean. Our friend the Adam. He's you're not going to leave, right?
No, nowhere to go.
All right, he's staying here.
I got out of Switzerland? Are you kidding?
You see that black boy over there running scared? His old man in a bottle. He done quit his 9 to 5. He drink full time. Now he's living in a bottle. See that black boy over there running scared? His old man got a problem. And it's a bad one. He ain't done. Living in the bottom. Listen,
the doctor helping young girls along. If they wasn't too far gone to have problems. But the offenders of the Dollar Eagle said, what you doing, man? Illegal. Now he's in the bottle. And now we watch him every day. He's trying to chase the prisons away from the bottom. He turned to me. He said, man, don't you think it's a crime? The way time after time friends of mine in the bottom. There's people showing up in the bottom. Come on, hit it a lick one time, Steve.
Ladies and gentlemen, news of a model of Australian engineering it is. Taxpayers of Australia spent at least $1.5 million on it. They're still paying for workers to run it. It could save lives and win hearts and minds, but it has never been used. It's a sewage treatment plant built on the outskirts of the capital of Afghanistan's Oruzgan province, cited as a showpiece for Australia's aid effort in one of the poorest places on earth. But the plant's expansive treatment ponds are empty. The tanker truck meant to take waste from septic tanks has never been used and has been immobilized for months because of either vandalism or mechanical problems. The truck is idle, so are the two Afghan workers hired to run the plant and whose salaries are paid for by Australian taxpayers. The Afghan Defense Force and Australian aid refused requests by the Sunday Age newspaper to speak to an official involved in the project was built by Australian Army engineers. The aim was to improve sanitation, but problems with the project appear to indicate that delivering aid to Afghanistan is one thing. Building the capacity of Afghan institutions to manage the aid is another. An American consultant who recently visited the plant said it was beautifully constructed. He said, I hate to see something like this go either unused or misused. From the Telegraph in London, the brochures offering pampered life and state-of-the-art apartments could be selling dream properties in any Western capital. In the ornate towers and palm trees shown in artists' impressions would look at home in the boulevards of a Gulf emirate. The chic apartments they advertise is in one of the world's poorest countries. In Kabul, a series of luxury apartment complexes and even a skyscraper are planned for those who have made fortunes in the gold rush brought by the money brought by NATO forces. Twin 26-story towers are scheduled to begin construction just next month, and at least 8 other luxury towers are planned or underway. Property developers are overwhelmed by demand for swanky apartments in Afghanistan, priced at up to $300,000 from Afghans grown rich on international jobs and reconstruction contracts. You're welcome. Despite Pakistan's repeated assurances that its history as a nuclear scofflaw is firmly behind it, the U.S. has continued to intensely monitor Pakistan's nuclear and missile programs, a survey of WikiLeaks cables by the Dawn newspaper indicates. Dozens of cables from U.S. embassies around the world are seen inquiring into purchases by Pakistan's nuclear and missile complexes on the international market. The head of NATO has admitted that the security of Pakistan's nuclear weapons is a matter of concern, the day after the worst assault on a Pakistan military base in 2 years. Here's Anders Fogh Rasmussen's statement. He's the head of NATO. You knew that. Come on. Quote, based on the information and intelligence we have, I feel confident that Pakistan's nuclear arsenal is safe and well protected. But of course, it is a matter of concern, and we follow the situation closely. So I'm confident, but it's a matter of concern. And top Pakistani military officials, says the Washington Post, are increasingly concerned that their ranks are penetrated by Islamists or aiding militants in a campaign against the state. These worries have grown especially acute since the killing of bin Laden. Pakistan's army chief has publicly expressed anger over the secret U.S. raid, was so shaken by the discovery of bin Laden, he told U.S. officials in a recent meeting that his first priority was, quote, bringing our house to order. You know by now that Secretary of State Hillary Clinton paid an unannounced visit to Pakistan on Friday of this week to deliver a list of things that the United States would like Pakistan to do, including allowing the CIA, which was announced, to inspect bin Laden's hideout to collect whatever they could collect because, the SEAL Team 6, I mean, they were in there for only, 40 minutes. And they're penguins. Oh, no, that's the Disney version. So, and some other, things that the United States would like. Wonder what that sound like, that meeting between Hillary Clinton and the Pakistani Prime Minister? You don't have to wonder anymore. Clinton something is next here on the show.
Clinton something, the State Department years.
So, Mr. Prime Minister.
So, Madam Secretary.
That was a lovely photo op.
Yes, interesting, refreshing. Usually you have to smile so much at these things.
Oh, that's right. Well, of course, normally it's just because you have to signal some sort of amicability between the parties.
Oh, indeed. Fortunately, we didn't have to engage in such mendacious niceties.
No. And in the age of WikiLeaks, really, why should we?
No, that's true. Mm-hmm. People would be wise to the fallacious nature of the photos before they even appeared.
Oh, true enough. So, I guess we should get down to business.
Mm-hmm. Unless you're waiting for another serving of garlic naan, I suppose we should.
No, I'm fine. Mm. So, you saw the list of the actions we would like to see from your government.
I did. Good. It was interesting. You might almost say amusing.
Well, I'm flattered, Mr. Prime Minister. I haven't been called amusing since I read nutty headlines on the Jay Leno show during my presidential campaign, but I have to add I'm also a bit puzzled.
Well, now I'm flattered. I haven't been described as puzzling since I vowed to find the terrorists who assassinated my wife. Why puzzled?
Well, you're aware that in the wake of the successful operation on your soil against Osama bin Laden,
may Allah give him peace,
that the Congress of my country is particularly upset with your government.
Well, having seen Prime Minister Netanyahu's speech to your Congress, it looks like they're also particularly upset with your government.
I'm going to choose to pretend that I'm ignoring that. But the expectations on my little list are not just designed to keep Congress people happy. They're designed to prevent our distinguished lawmakers from taking to our Pakistan aid budget with a meat cleaver, if not a chainsaw.
Madam Secretary, if it wasn't so wearying to keep explaining to visiting American officials their realities on the ground in my country, it would be enjoyable. We have a population that's growing more anti-American with every chapati. We have a neighbor which does not wish us well. And on our other border, we have India. You know, this is not just the age of WikiLeaks. We've got cable, too. When your vice president says on CNN that American troops will start leaving Afghanistan this year, that tells me we have to plan for a future where pleasing the American Congress may not be our top priority.
Mr. Prime Minister, with all due respect, the only reason our vice president is allowed to speak publicly is to give the late-night shows a reason not to make fun of the president. His pronouncements regarding our strategic plans for this region should be taken as the absolute opposite of authoritative.
That would be what? Unauthoritative?
If that's a word, yes. So obviously we're expecting some action on our expectations to be, you know, activated.
Well, it's a very ambitious list. I notice you want to have your CIA people go through the Bin Laden compound.
Yes, and this time hopefully not having the names of any of our agents made public by your government would be a real plus.
Oh, that was a rogue official.
He was a highly placed official, as I understand it.
Yes, but he was a highly placed rogue official. I couldn't help noticing you didn't put on your little list a request for your people to question Leku Khan.
Mr. Prime Minister, I'm here to be serious and forceful. I'm not here to pee up a rope.
Oh, I'm sorry. Do you need to excuse yourself?
It's a figure of speech.
Ha.
I hope that you can commit to your government being serious and forceful in meeting our expectations.
Madam Secretary, let me be at least this serious. Any reduction in the American government's wonderfully generous aid program to my country would result in us, purely for cost-saving reasons, having to withdraw our military protection for your supply routes into Afghanistan. That would be, and I believe your baby boomers describe it this way, that would be a bumster. I'm sure your senior congresspeople are aware of this reality without the need for you to go back and remind them of it as soon as you leave my country.
But if Vice President Biden is right, we won't be needing those supply lines much longer.
You just told me he's not authoritative on these matters.
Oh, I know. But as it turns out, I may be unauthoritative on these matters, too. Everything's so compartmentalized these days.
You know, I have to get back to this. Your administration of old people should appreciate how unseemly it is to have a foreign official deliver a set of demands while on your soil.
Mr. Prime Minister, at least I'm doing you the very great courtesy of not delivering our expectations to your government in public.
Madam Secretary, in this age of WikiLeaks, maybe you're just dead.
Youthful angst and middle-aged power, together they add up to Clinton something, the State Department years.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
So sorry.
Rod Blagojevich, testifying at his corruption trial in Chicago, choked up as he detailed his childhood, his hobbies, his schooling, his insecurities, and his family. He told jurors he was there to tell them the truth. He told them about his early love of reading World Book encyclopedias. And regarding the profanity-laced comments he's heard uttering repeatedly on the government wiretaps, quote, "When I hear myself on tape swearing like that, I'm an effing jerk. And I apologize for that." Honda Motor Company has apologized for a security breach involving a hacked database of customers in Canada. I know, but it's Canada. A vice president of the utility that provides electricity to 134,000 customers in Wyoming expressed regret for the poor quality of service. At the end of the meeting with Natrona County attorney Bill Knight, they had a half dozen VPs there from Portland and Salt Lake City, he says, and the VP apologized personally for the situation that we've got. I don't know what that situation might be. At the premiere of her new film, you can find out the name of it somewhere else, maybe somewhere else on this station. Jane Seymour found herself speculating about the breakup of Maria Shriver and Arnold Schwarzenegger. She said she thought he was father to at least two more out-of-wedlock children and predicted more information would soon surface. Then, on The View, Seymour apologized for the remarks and said she hoped she didn't add to the family's pain. I am so beyond sorry and appalled that I found myself even talking on the subject at all. I just feel so badly for Maria and the children because I've been through similar kinds of stuff. She noted she didn't go out of her way to address the relationship. Her movie touches on similar themes, and she was asked to comment. Still, she hopes the Shriver family will accept her apology. The movie opens worldwide, and the thing. The chairman of a New York utility company apologized to the family of a soldier killed in Afghanistan for charging a fee to hang American flags from their poles during a ceremony to honor him. Howard's happy Memorial Day, everybody. Howard Steinberg, chairman of the Long Island Power Authority, reached out to the family of Lieutenant Joseph Feinart a week after the memorial service in the small town of Shelter Island. We want to apologize to the family, Steinberg said in a statement. The trustees and I are all very upset about this. We do not support the idea of charging for flags to be hung on LIPA poles, nor do we approve of the way it was handled. This will not be an issue going forward, unquote, especially since some of the poles were owned by Verizon, not the power company. As he faces possible sanctions from the Joe Gibbs racing team and biting criticism from the public, Kyle Busch apologized profusely for being cited for driving 128 miles per hour in a 45 mile per hour zone Tuesday in North Carolina. He's a race car driver, ladies and gentlemen. He was caught speeding at the middle of the afternoon, 1:52 p.m., in a residential area while driving a Lexus sports car lent to him by the manufacturer. Quote, obviously, I had a lack of judgment and I just made a mistake and I'm sorry for making that mistake. Fortunately, there was no one hurt, but that doesn't make any kind of excuse for what happened and for my lack of judgment for what I did. When asked why he was driving 128 miles per hour, I'm certainly sorry that it happened and my judgments led me to speed. It was a lack of judgment and all I could do was apologize to the public, my fans, my sponsors, and everybody and look at this experience as a learning experience and move forward. And try to repeat the word judgment a little more. Other sports apologies, Joachim Noah, center of the Chicago Bulls, apologized after allegedly using a gay slur toward a fan during their loss to the Miami Heat on Sunday. And Mississippi Governor Haley Barbour has apologized on behalf of Mississippi for how freedom riders were treated. We apologize to you for the mistreatment in 1961, and we appreciate this chance for atonement and reconciliation. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Regular features, a copyrighted feature, is itself a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz shortwave, on the mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want at harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. Available for your smartphone through stitcher.com and available as a free podcast from kcrw.com. And it'd be just like finding some place to put that irradiated water if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. We'll be right back. A tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Hawaii, and Chicago back at home desks. And thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. The email address for this broadcast and a list of the music heard here on, part of the Farrago of features at harryshearer.com. This program is on Twitter at The Harry Shearer. Join the 35,000 followers. Be a follower. It's fun. And for information on when and where you can see The Big Uneasy where you are, TheBigUneasy.com. Or take the short drive to Baton Rouge next Saturday. Ladies and gentlemen, the show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions. I'll be there. Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.